From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 27th day of October 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Gary Schnittke has written a new article for the Farm Doc Daily website, this one with next year's crop budgets for the 2021 growing season. You want to hear all about that. Don Day will be here to discuss a big low and a big high and a big blow on both sides of those events. And then, of course, we'll take up the ethanol industry along with the agricultural energies. Dan O'Brien will be here. He's at K-State Extension in Heston, Kansas. And we'll do all of that right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today, a penny and three quarters lower, finished at $4.16 a bushel. The March at $4.16 and a half, two lower, and July at $4.17 and a quarter, down two. December of next year, a penny lower at $3.91 and a quarter. November beans down 5.5 cents, $10.82 and a quarter. The settlement price, January at $10.76 and a half, seven lower, and July soybeans down 6 3/4 at $10.51 3/4. Bean oil futures 35 cents lower, $34.11. The settlement price, the bean meal at $384, down $5.60 a ton. July soft red winter wheat, 2.5 cents lower at $6.05 3/4. The hard red at $5.66, down three for the day. October live cattle at $104.85, up 87.5. December 65 cents higher at $104.05 for 100 pounds. October feeder cattle, $134.30, up 60 cents. In November, $1.72.5 higher at $132.30. Lean hogs, December contract, a dime lower at $67.65, February at $68.05. That finished 40 cents higher on the afternoon. Let's turn our attention to those markets and talk a little bit about what happened in Chicago and the broader perspective as well. We're joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Hey, good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thank you so very, very much for being with us today.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. It's a not beautiful day in Newmarket. It's a little cloudy, a little misty rain, and harvest has stopped for a day or two over here, but it's been dry enough. We'll be back in the field as soon as this rain quits.
You know, it's kind of funny because I know farmers have been going day in and day out, and they felt like it's been February 2nd every day, or just Groundhog Day, same thing every day. And they wanted a break, but my guess is they were thinking, oh, I'm almost to the end. If I could just get three more days. And then it rained.
Yeah, I think the rest was well needed and deserved that way. And yes, after the 3 or 4 days off here, why they're going to be ready to go back to the field. And we're going to wrap up pretty fast over here. Harvest is really progressing, and we're seeing just a lot of empty fields, and they're really flying along. And we're continuing to hear some pretty good yields.
Well, good yields. And not only that, but in your part of the world, and I think I heard a couple 15 overs at maybe some ethanol plants in your part of the world?
Yeah, we've seen some real good basis levels flying around over here, with some of the ethanol plants and that, they're a little short and trying to coax some grain out of the farmers because most everybody sold their beans and they don't need cash and they've got empty bins at home. But we have seen a lot of trucks last Friday rolling in and Saturday rolling into Lafayette up at Tate and Lyle and into Linden there. And Linden was producing ethanol as we went by there, too. So, yeah, they are building up. And, of course, any guys down along the river, they are wanting corn and beans to get down south for the book that we have on with China and the other countries right now.
Ethanol plants apparently are doing okay at this time.
They're doing okay. It's going to be we can't go a lot higher than on this because the crude oil is going down, went down in price. It's under $40. The December crude oil, it's trading $39.45 now, and much over $4.25 corn starts to not work well. So, it's one of those catch-22 situations. We'd like to have cheap oil, but for the corn farmer and the ethanol plant, we maybe need the crude to get back over 40.
We've had half a month or so, maybe a bit more than that, since the last USDA report. The next one comes up in the month of November. Do you think there will be many changes? There usually aren't in this month.
You know, I really don't look for many. There's a lot of people thinking maybe this, maybe that, but I personally don't think they're way off. You know, as we talk about estimating some of that stuff, even looking at South America, Michael Cordonnier left all of his South American production estimates unchanged from the last time. So he's saying even with a little bit of delay. And, you know, Paraná is back on schedule with their planning now. They were way behind, but they've caught up now. Now there's still going to be some of that early that was planted a little later than what they thought. And hopefully there'll be a little delay in their Safrina corn bidding planted and might give us a little extra boost there. But all in all, it looks like, you know, South America's continuing to get some rains right now.
So a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about filling the gap, meaning between the time that the delay took place in South America for planting, and that had upped the ante for U.S. exports to China in particular, to being much more bullish than that. Do you think producers and traders should really be on that much of a bullish side of this marketplace still?
Well, for right now, I mean, we've got an election in a week, Todd, and we're seeing a little bit of fund liquidation. They don't know how big a bet they want to take into the election. You know, if you were to ask me today, if you can tell me this one would win or that one would win, I'm not even sure how they'd react. But we do know that the market doesn't like uncertainty. So what the biggest thing that maybe they're betting against is not a Republican or Democrat win, but a Republican or Democrat, both of them being, you know, a not decided election. I think that brings uncertainty, and I think that would bring the grain markets down.
Anything else to take up before I let you go?
I think that we're going to watch here. We've got some good prices and some good basis levels, and I want the farmers to, you know, you might want to take, if nothing else, maybe if the basis level's way up here, to take advantage of some basis sales.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows 72% of the corn crop around the nation has been harvested. The rolling five-year average is 56%. In the state of Illinois, 80% of the crop is now off of the land. In Indiana, 62%. Iowa at 78% done. The soybean harvest around the nation, 83% complete. 73% is the five-year average. In Illinois, we have 90% of the crop gone. Indiana, 82%. In Iowa, 94% of the soybeans have now been harvested. Hard red winter wheat across the nation is now 85% planted. The rolling five-year average is 80%. The emergence rate at 62% is pretty on par with the 60% five-year average, and the condition of that crop is said to be 35% good and 6% excellent. Last year at this time, those numbers were 44% good and 12% excellent. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke is here now to take a look at his most recent article for the Farm Doc Daily website. This time around, he takes a look at crop budgets not for the current marketing year. That would be a third update, I think, right, Gary, if that was the case. But for next year, for the 2021 crops, so those that would be sold in 2021 or 2022 that are also harvested in that year. So let's talk a little bit about what those crop budgets look like for this year. You did corn after soybeans, corn after corn, soybeans after corn, soybeans after soybeans, which is a new rotation that you put in, wheat, and then double crop soybeans too. So there are a lot of budgets to discuss. Which one comes out ahead?
So this year, our leading budget in all regions of the state is soybeans after corn. So soybeans is projected to be more profitable than corn this year, so that's what we're looking at in this state. So
yeah, so and it's not by a particularly small amount either.
So our projections are for operator and land return, which would be all cost except for cash rent or how the land is controlled, was $290 for soybeans and $220 for corn. So right now we're projecting soybeans to be $70 more profitable than corn.
Hold on, wait a second. So that's not including a cash rent or any kind of land payment at all?
Yeah, that's true. So we don't include a cash rent in there. So And in the numbers that I just described, we would be looking at an average cash rent right at $275 per acre. So if you average a corn and soybean rotation, we're still $20 below on operator and land return, or that's $20 lower than cash rent. However, that's closer than it's been in the last couple years at this point in time. And we haven't included any ad hoc federal payments for next year. And we got yields at trend levels. So there's where we're at.
So why did you put the soybean after soybean rotation in?
Because for the past several years, soybeans have been more profitable than corn. And so more people are thinking about doing soybeans after soybeans. So we did a comparison and put that in the budget. Our soybean after soybeans budget has a $266 return, which is still higher than corn, which again is $220 of return. So our budgets would say that soybeans after soybeans is going to be more profitable than corn after corn.
And that's more likely to happen, I think, in the southern part of the state, as is, of course, the double crop soybeans after wheat. And when you put those two together, they do pretty well as well.
Yeah, so, excuse me, as wheat has a $97 return. Double crop soybeans, and we're building in a 43 bushel yield on double crop soybeans, is $157. So the combination of the two is about $245 a return. So soybeans still does better. Soybeans alone still does better than the wheat double crop soybeans rotation. But right now, our wheat double crop soybean rotation is a higher return than corn. So if you look at the prices that we're projecting, they favor soybeans over corn. And we're using a $9.45 price for soybeans and $3.55 for corn for next year. So,
right. So you're telling me that they're still looking not at great returns once you put in the cost of cash rent or whatever the land payment happens to be. However, I've seen land sales recently. They don't appear to be dropping back. And I know for quite some time you've been saying, hey, we got to renegotiate cash rents. But based on land sales, that's not going to happen, I suppose.
No, and again, coming back, this is a 2021 return projection. If you're looking at 2020 returns, we're looking at corn prices over $4 right now. And soybean prices over $10. So, I mean, this 2020 year will likely be a pretty good returning year, particularly after you build in CFAP payments and other things going on. So, yeah, that's going to probably keep cash rents at the levels that they're at.
Yeah, MFP, WIP Plus, CFAP 1, CFAP 2, and PPP. I don't think I missed anything, but there might be something else there
that
came in.
I don't. If you made an EIDL loan or the Economic Disaster Assistance
right
loan. So those are all there, and obviously those are going to help the 2020 returns. But moving into 2021, again, we're sort of at this place where, you know, lower returns are projected without any ad hoc disaster assistance or above trend yields. So if we get another year of above trend yields and $3.55 price for corn, $9.45 for soybeans, we'll be okay. So there's where we're at.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Folks can find this on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Gary Schnitke has joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don Day is here now from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, a lot of ground to cover. I want to start in California. Still a lot of wind, a lot of fire. What kind of conditions are they working under?
Well, not going to get any better. This is the time of year, which is normally dry. You tend to, as you get into November and December, start to get into the pattern where they get more wet. But, you know, over the next week to 10 days, there's just not much help there. And this big cold wave, this big area high pressure that came into the Rockies and Plain States, and now the cold air pushing in the Midwest, that high pressure center is working with low pressure that's out in the eastern Pacific, causing a wind gradient and causing that Santa Ana wind into Southern California, fanning the flames of the fires there. So, unfortunately, There's going to be a little bit of help with less in the way of that pressure gradient over the coming days, but no precipitation either.
Then from the northern plains through the eastern Corn Belt, lots of cold weather. Precipitation, too. Can you tell me about what's happening over the next week or so?
Yeah, well, right now it doesn't look like any real heavy precipitation in the northern and western areas of the Corn Belt, but there is going to be some wetness across portions of eastern Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, and the eastern Corn Belt, parts of the central Corn Belt, will get some moisture, first of all, from the low coming out of the southwest United States over the next couple of days, and then what's left of what will be Hurricane Zeta is going to come up and catch the eastern areas of the Corn Belt with some rain here later this week and over into the part of the weekend coming up the first half of the weekend. So it'll be the central, southern, and eastern Corn Belt areas that look to be the most wet, drier, north and west.
Is the hurricane still scheduled to come ashore somewhere near the port of New Orleans? And I'm really concerned about not only the people and lives there, but of course the port itself and whether it will remain operational.
Yeah, it's certainly a concern. Now, there's a couple things going on. First of all, it weakened to a tropical storm overnight as it went over parts of Mexico and weakened a little bit. It is going to likely become a hurricane again. The one positive thing about this is that the low coming out of the southern plains is going to help accelerate and make the speed of the hurricane a lot quicker than the last two that have impacted the Gulf. So, yes, it's going to go through that port area. Yes, there will be heavy rain and strong winds, but it will be at least a very quick mover.
Yeah, so it won't be stifled and just drop deluges upon that area. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Dan O'Brien now joins us from Kansas State University Extension, where he's an agricultural economist. Hey, thanks so much, Dan, for being with us to talk about ethanol and biodiesel on this Tuesday afternoon. What have you been watching closely this week?
Well, it's been interesting to watch the trends in ethanol versus RBOB prices. Here is within the last week or so, last several weeks, you've seen ethanol prices move from, say, in early August, $1.11 per gallon, early September, $1.31, early October, $1.36, and now $1.55. And at the same time, RBOB prices have went from $1.21, $1.22, basically through August, September, a little, and then now in October to $1.15. So the ratio of ethanol to RBOB has been jumping, quote, and so one of those factors, the RBOB prices, reflecting concerns in the motor fuel market, and no doubt, Todd, what's been happening with oil, with concerns about COVID-19 having impacts on the international oil markets, probably reflected in the RBOB gasoline price, but on the ethanol side, you know, we've got corn demand going on. And with harvest prices having what for some would be a surprise rally, you're seeing the ethanol tied in somewhat or following from ethanol prices falling from what's been happening in the corn market. So that's been a challenge, or at least something to try to ponder and make sure we understand what the issues are. We do have ethanol having recovered to about 87, 88, 89% of where we were before COVID-19 hit. So that's interesting, of course. And I think the consistency of that over the last several weeks is somewhat reassuring, I think, to the corn market in terms of corn demand in the ethanol sector, although they would really rather have 100% or more of that recovery having occurred. And when you look at profitability, over the last several months, we've seen ethanol plants running at basically a break even to a loss of five or six cents per gallon. To me, as I watch what's happened so far in October, we have an October cost of about $1.39 a gallon, a price averaging about $1.36, and a net of about 3 cents under. And again, that's looking at what's happening in Iowa ethanol plants. The week ending October 23rd, in which corn prices jumped in Iowa to about $3.94, saw ethanol prices also jump to about $1.41, And it's interesting that, well, and also DDG prices to $165 per ton. With all of that, it looks like that as we see gyrations moving around and volatility in those markets represented at ethanol plants, that we tend to stay around 3 cents loss. So I don't know that there's a formula in that market. It's, surely there's not, but you do have supply demand forces at play that tend to hold us at break even to about 3 to 5 cents under. And so when we see corn prices move higher, we've been tending to see the ethanol price follow suit and keep us at about that break even situation.
So it's really the DDGs that make the ethanol plant. Or the two co-products together that make an ethanol plant work?
Well, right now that seems to be the case, yes. And DDGs have been stronger. We're all looking now toward, in a lot of our ag commodities, towards what the Chinese market could supply. It's certainly the case for soybeans. And expectations of pretty strong ethanol demand, well, excuse me, of corn export demand coming out of China and elsewhere, some problems with crops in South America, et cetera. So I think when we stand back and look at where corn futures are at right now, you're looking at basically Dease corn at 416, 417, thereabouts, as we for this week, and that's not 450, but it's not 350 either. So we're slowed down right now for harvest. We're at the point now where we wonder how the optimism of ag producers will affect their marketing patterns. Our if people have cash flow needs, yes, they're selling, but we're sort of at the mode where we'd anticipate, I think, kind of a standoff between farmers that have the ability to hold grain, hold corn in particular, and buyers that want to pull it out of their hands, entering into this late year competition for ownership of the grain. So I think we'll be watchful of that. We're kind of in the mode, I think, to where during November, December, we'll be holding grain. Then what happens once we get into the new crop year? Will we see a bunch of grain held for tax purposes out into January, that suddenly be let go, et cetera? So in a seller's market, these are the type of dynamics that we're dealing with. We're in markets where we have that are buyer's markets, again, producers are a lot more at risk or at the will of buyers, but that doesn't seem to be the case this year. It does seem to be more of a seller's market.
Hey, thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien. He's with K-State Extension. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.